And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Español is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. Our guest host and senior producer is Kevin Pina. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at DennisJBernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Have you seen Kabu's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag Fuzzy Boo, and you'll be entered to win a chance to have Fuzzy Boo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kabu.fm/fuzzyboo.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 11 a.m. Coming up on Pacific Underground. Well, I'll let them tell you what it's all about, because that starts right now.
Portland. Good morning, Portland. I don't know. I don't know how to do a good, like, smooth intro there, I guess. But good morning. You're tuned in to Pacific Underground here on KBOO Portland. I am one of your hosts this morning. I'm Jenna, and I am joined with Let's Go Around the Table.
V here.
I'm Alex.
Alex is our special guest, and V is one of our new collective members. Welcome, V.
Thank you.
And Alex Chu is a Portland artist. He's sitting with us here today. We're going to do an interview, a more in-depth interview with him. We're going to talk about his latest project, which is painting a mural on the Open Signal building. And so, yeah, if you're driving over on MLK every once in a while, you can see Alex painting and doing his thing. So thanks for joining us, Alex, this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about, I don't know, stuff that's going on in Portland real quick, API stuff that's going on in Portland that, okay, I'm going to bring up the first thing that I'm like a little bit like, hey, oh, yay, maybe good API news. So the Portland police, like yesterday, I think they swore in the interim chief of police, because right, they selected a new chief who's going to be Chief Outlaw, who is someone coming from Oakland, and then so, but in the meantime they have an interim guy who is part of the Portland police, and he's a Japanese American guy. And so Portland police put out this like tweet yesterday that was like, hey, the first Asian/Pacific Islander chief of police of Portland. And my first thought was like, you mean your first model minority of Portland? Mm-hmm. But I'm like trying to be more hopeful. V, am I just being too cynical about this? What would it, do you think this could be a good thing?
I'm not sure. I mean, I actually, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. So I don't have too much, I haven't really processed it very much. But I guess my first immediate reaction is, I don't know, at least he's not white.
Yeah, I mean, like, I want it to, you know, it's like they're trying to put forward this idea of like, hey, look it, we're doing diversity and here's the first, and it's like you want to acknowledge that, like, I guess, milestone. At the same time, just like, hey, we should talk about the other person that's in the room. In case you're wondering, does that sound like a child in the background? Yes, it is. Alex has actually been on Pacific Underground before. Alex, when was that?
Maybe a month ago.
I want to say maybe a little more than a month ago.
Yeah.
So if you recognize Alex's voice and you recognize the child in the background, that's Mazzy from the Mazzy Show when we interviewed them a couple months ago. So yeah, on top of being the Mazzy Show, Alex is actually also a working artist.
Yeah, I'm a stay-at-home dad, so in order to do this radio show, I had to bring her along with me, but we'll see how it goes.
She's got snacks and a toy, and maybe we'll do a little interviewing with Mazzy as well. Welcome back, Mazzy. Like, you're becoming a regular on our show.
You want to say hi, Mazzy? Do you want to say hi?
No, of course, she's
going to microphone. Too shy to talk. She didn't say anything during the last radio show either.
Yeah, she was in the room the whole time, though. She did really good.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, she looked like Mazzy from the Mazzy Show.
Yeah.
So have you done any sort of cool API things around town this week?
Yesterday, I actually, I went to go see this movie titled Gook, and I'm sorry if that offends anyone that I'm saying that.
It's the title.
Yeah, it was really good. I was just in the mood to watch a movie, so I was trying to see what's been playing around Portland, and I saw that and looked really interesting, and I went to go see it, and it was actually really heavy stuff.
Yeah, like, why don't you tell people kind of like loosely what it's about?
So it's a movie directed by Justin Chan, and it takes place on the first day of the LA riots, and it's about two Korean brothers who are trying to kind of keep this business, this shoe selling business, afloat in a predominantly black neighborhood, and there's a young black girl that kind of hangs around their shop, and there's a lot of tension between her family and their family because her family doesn't want her hanging around the shop, and it kind of just takes place around those dynamics and the dynamics mm-hmm. of the different races that are interacting in this neighborhood. And there was a lot of yelling. It was a bit much, and it was very, at least for me, and I don't want to give it away or anything, but it was very reminiscent of Do the Right Thing vibes, which I appreciated.
Yeah, that whole, the LA riots, and, you know, it's still like that whole racial dynamic and the racial tension is, you know, still playing out in so many different cities, still in LA, you mm-hmm. know, where you're having these immigrant group coming into an area, you know, that is going into other people's community and like opening stores that like aren't necessarily always geared specifically mm-hmm. towards the Korean community, and they're like making money off these people that they're like moving to their neighborhoods, you know. So that tension is definitely still there, and I think it's like a really difficult thing for like mm-hmm. the Asian American community to like discuss mm-hmm. and so I think it's been really interesting as like, you know, because what was this anniversary, it was like the 20th anniversary, something like that, and you know, it's just like, wow, we still haven't really figured that out, like how it plays out. So I'm really curious to see Gook.
Yeah, I would love to discuss it with you.
I know,
once
I
you
so
see it.
I'm bummed I couldn't go, because we could totally be talking about it and doing all sorts of spoilers on the air right now. But so you would recommend it?
I would definitely recommend seeing it. It's there's a lot to unpack in the film, and I haven't actually really processed it. I saw it late last night and went to bed right after, so I'll probably have a lot more to say about it in a few days or so.
Yeah, maybe if I can like try to find another like screening of it, because it was like a special screening.
I think it's playing tonight.
Oh dang! Maybe I'll try to make it out. But okay, so the thing I did this week that in like Portland API land was, I saw Keiichi Bashi for the first time. That was pretty amazing, but it wasn't actually like his concert. He was traveling with a musician named Julian Savariti, and this guy, as part of his PhD dissertation at Brown, is going to all the different Japanese American incarceration camps and like playing music that was written there and music that was inspired by his visit there. Like, he had a song called Heart Mountain, and it was really kind of cool because I've not really seen anything like that, like Asian artists singing about Asian American history and like about that identity. like I've heard songs like by Yellow Pearl and I've seen like YouTube videos and stuff, but to actually stand in an audience and watch like my story being told mm-hmm. and being sung by my people was really powerful. I was like, oh, I get that Yellow Pearl line in one of their songs. They say like, sing a song for ourselves. Like, what mm-hmm. do we got to lose? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow. That's a powerful thing. So yeah, just representation. But talking about representation, let's get into Alex's work. Because, Alex, you're bringing all sorts of representation into your latest work. So Alex Chu, artist extraordinaire, also known as Mazzy's dad, but right now is part of a larger project that is being done by the Regional Arts and Cultural Council's Public yeah. Art Murals Program. It's called Fresh Paint. And Alex is one of three artists mm-hmm. that was chosen to paint a mural on the Open Signal building of MLK. So Alex says he's trying to be dad right now and do an interview. I'm like really impressed with him right now. But that so is being dad. So Alex, how did you get involved with this project? Was there an open submission? How did you learn about it?
I've been trying to push myself as a muralist for a long time. So anytime there's an opportunity that comes out, I'm all for public art and I think it's really important. So at one point in our neighborhood, I live in Powellhurst. So it's called Powellhurst, I live on 136th in between Foster and Holgate, and there was a retention wall, and originally there was a proposition to do a public art project from youth in the community. So I was a part of a committee that was trying to get that to go forward, and in order to do that, you have to get permission from RAC. So as I talked to them, we tried to push this project forward and it didn't go forward. And eventually they got another artist to do it, but it did introduce me to the concept of doing public art in Portland. So I applied for this thing called the public mural roster. And if you go on to RAC, there's a way to get connected and find out more about that. But I applied for that, and I guess it opens up your opportunities to do public art. So as time went on and more mural opportunities came up, they reached out to me, and I interviewed for the Open Signal mural. And then right now, even this is kind of layering things, but I actually got hired to do a mural for TriMet as well. Oh. So I think we can talk about both. So Open Signal is one project, so I'm a part of that, and I'm going to be doing that mural in mid to late September. And then currently I'm working on a mural for TriMet at the 82nd Avenue transit stop.
Yeah, and I find that to be really awesome that you're doing the TriMet one. So I should have mentioned that one first, because that's like the current one that you're working on. Just because you're an artist that lives on the east side yeah. of Portland, and you have this mural that you're painting on 82nd, you know, which is people think of as like, you know, the diverse, I hate people, like, that's like the diverse area of Portland, which it is actually the truth. Mm-hmm. It is actually far more diverse, you know, down there. And that your mural that you're doing down there is depicting that very much so. Like, could you describe where exactly is it? It's on 82nd and what?
There's not really like a major intersection. So if you go down 82nd, it goes, once you go towards Montevilla, it's in the northeast, so it's kind of where the northeast begins, but it's in between the Montevilla Community Center, and the streets are Northeast Wasco, and I think the other intersection is, I don't even know what the other intersection is, but it's between it's near Madison High School, and it's near Hong Fat too, that okay. supermarket.
I'll say when you say that, like, oh, I just say Hong Fat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so can you describe like the mural a bit? Like how large is it? Because it's actually quite big.
There's just a lot of wall space. So it's not like one giant wall in particular. There's I'm going to be painting the upper and lower platform level. And on the upper platform level, there are 8 low panels that are all separated. So they're all only like 3 feet high, but each of them is anywhere from 8 to 20 feet wide. So I'm doing 8 different panels at the top near the bus stop. And then there's a large wall at the bottom, and the highest part of the wall is about 19 feet high. And it's right where the train gets off. And it's the wall for the staircase, so it's kind of got this weird diagonal curvature to it, but it's that's the biggest wall. And you can actually see that. I think it's the 84 freeway, but you can see it from the freeway.
Mm-hmm. So what's in the different panels? Is it just like one kind of image, or is there like a bunch of different...
Yeah.
Tell story.
Yeah, I've definitely been getting this question a lot because people come up to me and they're like, oh, what are you painting? Because I've kind of blocked out all the primer, like the base coat for everything, and I'm keeping some of the cement so you can see the silhouette of everything that's happening. So the concept is pretty complicated, but I'll try to be as direct as possible. So I'm trying to feature as many different parts of the community as I can. So I reached out to people of different ethnic nationalities, and I also reached out to different community members and community organizations. And my intention was just to represent these people of various cultures and try to unify them in a way. So the theme of my mural is actually my daughter. So she's a symbol that I established in the first panel. So I drew this kind of animated frame by frame mural of her as she's running towards us, and it establishes her as the character, and she interacts with people from different communities. And the main concept of the mural is how people in that community give back to the next generation, or educate, or feed, or teach the next generation. So that's the concept that I had in mind when I did the interview. That's really what I wanted to capture. So I set up a number of photo shoots that I did with people. So I intentionally went forward and went to events and had get-togethers with people, and we photographed interactions with my daughter. And the idea is to depict how people are giving back to the next generation, and how they're passing down their culture and their ideas.
It's like, what's an example of what kind of interaction is she having in these panels?
I think the most explicit panel that I did that was very cultural and specific was I had met up with a person of Native American heritage, and she introduced the idea of sage smudging. So that was something that I'd never actually experienced before, so there's a lot of learning on my part. I mean, in a way, I'm getting used to this type of artwork, is reaching out to different people in the community, but it is new to me. It's not something that I normally do in my artwork. So reaching out to different people, especially people that I don't know, it was kind of difficult for me. So figuring out these interactions wasn't a natural process, but it taught me a lot of things. So this is how I kind of said, well, I want you to be able to represent your community and kind of what would you want to teach to the next generation, or what would you want to pass down to the next generation? And she had these symbols that we interacted with, and she had sage. So they actually did the ceremony where we did we burnt the sage and did a sage smudging. So that was one of the interactions that we did. But we also had a group that teaches hip hop, the Morpheus Youth Project, and I had a panel with breakdancing, and then I had another panel where I did a photo shoot with a music director. I'm throwing a lot at you because there's a lot of different ideas that I was working with, but those are some of the panels that I had.
Seems like Mazzy is...
Hi,
how
Mazzy.
You doing, Mazzy? So Mazzy, you're in your dad's murals. She's staring now. She's
It's funny because she, as I was doing the sketch, because I've been doing digital mock-ups and also photographs of it, she's kind of aware of what's going on. So I wonder how she's reacting to seeing her images actually painted on the wall.
Has she seen your mural yet? Yeah. Has she been there down with you to...
So as of the last couple days, I've actually fully rendered some paintings of her. So at this point, I would say it's like 5% finished. But there are like 3 fully rendered pictures of her, and she's been interacting with them. So I wonder how that's going to be like to have that around in public.
Yeah, I'm curious, because what you're well known for on the internet is the Mazzy Show. And here you have this mural now that you're doing, and Mazzy is a part of the artwork again. Is this anyhow connected, or are they just two totally separate ideas? What did one inspire the other at all?
My life has been changing a lot since Mazzy was born. I feel like there's a lot of adaptation to becoming a father, and also kind of interpreting what's going on politically, because this political climate has been something that I've been trying to understand. And then I've been at home more. I do freelance artwork. So during the whole process of the election year and the inauguration and all that, I was kind of at home, isolated, watching Mazzy and kind of freaking out a little bit. So I had a lot of like negative energy and trying to figure out how to process all this. And it seems like Facebook to me was really messing me up, because it's like everything that's intense in the world just like thrown at you in one like. So if you're having a good day and everything's fine, and then you go to the park with Mazzy and have some yogurt and go to OMSI, everything's chill, and then you come home and then you realize that people are like run over by cars, and people, and there's like I don't know, like natural disasters happening in different parts of the earth, and everything's like blatant racism is happening, and police shootings and all these things. It's just so much for me to handle. So a lot of my work with the Mazzy Show is also figuring out my own sense of identity. And then, because all of a sudden, I mean, I don't really think about racial or identity politics too much, and it's something that's new for me, and something that's only been introduced to me because of everything that's been happening lately. So my way of dealing with everything that's going on and the chaos of all of it is try to find something positive in the midst of who I am, and try not to freak out. Like I don't know, it's so I feel like the Mazzy Show was a way for me to
kind of channel better positive vibes, or
well find out more about myself, and also analyze like who I am and my own background, and represent that in a media art form that people are gravitated towards. Like YouTube is becoming like a new form of media that people are really diving into, and people have huge followings, and I feel like it's a great way for Asians and people of color to represent themselves. I mean, when I started getting into YouTube, it was like I don't see Asians anywhere else, and it seems like these people are really, really super famous. So it's like Wong Fu Productions, mm-hmm. and Ryan Higa, and all these comedians, Asian comedians, Jenny Yang, and a lot of other Asian comedians are using these types of platforms like YouTube to put work out there. And so it was interesting to me, and I didn't expect it to become anything, but the fact that people are gravitating towards it, I was it just got me thinking a lot. But then I think representation is important to me, so I mean, with this project, I'm just trying to be positive about my identity, and also try to represent positive aspects of multiculturalism in this country, because there is this idea that multiculturalism is destroying America, and that doesn't make very much sense to me. because I think that that's what America is. And I think my part in the whole discussion of things is trying to say, like, it's a good thing, and that people respect our country because of that. And also for me, I want to feel like I'm important in this country, and that I'm doing what I can to show that people of color are important. And not just myself, but I also want to represent other people of color in the community, and show that there are really cool, positive things happening.
Yeah, because when I saw your kind of initial sketches for the mural, I was really surprised, because one of the pieces of art that you've done here in the city that I really like, and I think it's kind of funny, is in the bathroom at the coffee house Southeast Grind.
Yeah.
You have you painted the walls there in the bathroom, and they're just beautiful. That you have these really interesting kind of characters that I think of kind of as your style, which are like these, how do you say, are they monsters? These kind of nondescript.
I'd like to call them monsters. I mean, I feel like if I'm being creative and just going with the flow, they end up becoming grotesque monsters. But they're cute too. So it's like kind of like a cute, horrific monster. Yeah. So that's like what I like to draw.
Yeah, so to see, instead of having the monsters, you have, you know, actually more like people and depictions of real life. I wondered if that was like a shift in style, or if it was just like a shift in idea, or was just kind of isolated to this mural that you're like wanting to do something different.
Previously art was just a form of escapism for me, and it was just a way for me to almost like get away from anything that's like real. And like I kind of had a really hard time with, I mean, just being an adult, you know? So it was almost like just like making cartoons that were poop and fart jokes, and making like strange cartoons of people melting or flying away with unicorns, or having lasers coming out of their eyes. So I feel like it is kind of like an adolescent concept, and I'm still really into that. I still follow a lot of artists that do that kind of art, and I would call it just weird, psychedelic, like visual vomit, kind of like lots of rainbows and lots of lasers and things like that. And I like that a lot, but again, it was just because just the political climate right now has really, really affected my psyche. And I just don't think that I can go about doing artwork without addressing certain issues that I have in my head. So, I mean, to go ahead and I feel like everything that I'm creating right now is pretty mundane. It's nothing like, it's just like people eating with Mazzy, or just painting Mazzy in general, just painting an Asian person, or just painting a Black person, or painting a Hispanic person or Native American person. So the ideas aren't controversial. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to make any like subversive statement right now. But I think that there's something about me having a need to just put that information out there, or to process that information, that I can't deny at this point. Because, yeah. I mean, there's just too many thoughts that I have and too many emotions. And also I'm just trying to, I think there is a lot of like personal bias and personal racism that I have that I'm trying to like deal with. And I think a lot of it is just to talk more about it and have more conversations about my own identity, so that when people talk to me about my art, I am telling them a story about my heritage, and I am telling them a story about my interpretation of being Asian American. So I think it's the beginning of something. And fortunately, people are giving me the opportunities to do pretty significant pieces of work.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to have the opportunity to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah, it feels like such, what you're saying to me reflects so much of, I feel like, how so many artists, their journeys are, or at least maybe I'm just talking about my own reflection of myself, where it's through music, that's my art form, is, you know, initially when I was younger, it was just about wanting to make any music. and it was very much escapism. It was not about talking about my identity. I think it was me searching for some kind of identity or an avoidance of adulting, like you're saying. And so it was fun. It was more fun, and even as a career, I tried to make it more fun. But now, in my 30s, I have a hard time doing music that doesn't feel like it comes something from an organic place within myself and actually reflects my own identity. It's hard to just do fluff. I don't know if that makes sense. And not to say that fluff is a negative thing, but you know, where it's something that's detached from one's identity. At least for me, that's how it's been.
I think that this whole period, and especially with like online activism, you know, it's like this thing that's happening, like people are like, you have a responsibility now to say something. If you're not saying something, you're complicit. And I think that it's me trying not to fall into complicity, but it's more than complicity, it's fear. Like, I think that I just don't want to be afraid in this country, or I don't want to feel like this concept of white nationalism, this big boogeyman.
Right?
Like, it's like, I'm just trying to deal with that. It's like, I just don't, like, I don't know what that is, you know? It's like, I don't know if it's real. I don't, I mean, it seems real, but I'm just trying to respond to that by just saying like, hey, I'm Chinese, like I'm here, I'm Asian, I'm not like, I'm not a majority in that sense. But then also tackling the idea of what it means to be a model minority, and also like understand the privilege that I have, because I feel like my life has been pretty privileged, to be completely honest, to be able to do my own artwork and make a living off of it and live in Portland and do all these things. I'm not trying to deny that I don't have that privilege. But I'm trying to figure out, I'm just trying to tackle, there's just so much processing that I've been trying to do. There's a lot behind it.
Well, hey, look at that. It's 11:30. I should probably tell people what they're listening to. You're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO Community Radio. We are talking with Portland artist, muralist Alex Chu. Also, we have his daughter Mazzy in studio. That's who here in the background. She's playing with some minions and hanging out. They've been on our show before. Welcome back, Mazzy and Alex. But we're going to take a quick little music break. We have a song by artist Janae Aiko, the musician, and got her song Eternal Sunshine, which, you know, it's talking about the good things in life. That was Eternal Sunshine by Jhené Aiko. And yeah, so you're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO Portland. And yeah, make sure to talk about the social media because I always forget to talk about this at the end. So if you are enjoying what you're listening to, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at PAC Underground. You can also find us on iTunes where we still have our two iTunes accounts because we still are needing to do some admin cleanup. But hey, you have twice as many opportunities to listen to Pacific Underground on iTunes, and we're also on SoundCloud and Google Play and Stitcher. So you can find us there if you are wanting to find an archive of our show. We are joined in studio today with Portland local artist and muralist Alex Chu, and we are also joined with his daughter Mazzy. If you remember our episode from like 2 months ago or so, where we had Alex and Mazzy on from the Mazzy Show. But today we are talking about Alex's latest project, which is a mural that is on 82nd for TriMet, and he also has a one that's coming up where he's going to be painting a mural on Open Signal, so you're going to be able to see Alex's art all around town.
So Alex, I'm curious, and you've touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious what influences your art. What inspires you?
Huh. Well, I feel like it was just a form of escape for me to be able to draw and doodle. I would like to say it was a big part of finding myself is to draw stream of consciousness. And I originally started by doing art and calling myself a doodler. So I just would buy sketchbooks, small sketchbooks that I could fit into my bag, and just fill up pages. And I didn't think too much about it. I would just fill up pages. And a lot of it was just like filling it up, showing it to people, and then them thinking it's really cool and just ripping it out of my sketchbook and giving it away. And a lot of it for me was just to create and just to be prolific. And a lot of that mentality came out of being a big fan of graffiti art, and the idea that the most important thing was just to proliferate and get your name out and get representation in that way, where it's like if no one else pays attention to you for anything else that you do, you just put out your artwork so that people can see it and that people can consume it. And a lot of it was also being part of artistic and creative online networks and being able to put my artwork up on, it started off with like DeviantArt and MySpace and Facebook, and putting it out there and getting a lot of good response, and then building an identity based on art. So for me, an inspiration was to do that. But I also fell into a genre of zine making and comics, like people who self-produce their own work and make Xerox copies of their comics and artwork and trade these zines. I was really inspired by Luke Ramsey, who has a publishing company called Island Folds, where he collaborates with different people, but lately he's been doing a lot of his own illustration work and murals as well. And there's an artist named Mark Bell who did stream of conscious doodling. He gave his form of art the term psychedelia, which is just like psychedelic doodles. And obviously they were smoking a lot of pot and drawing together. So that's kind of the genre and the space that I enjoyed being in the beginning of my art practice.
So You actually, when you were studying, like in college, you didn't study painting, right? Weren't you actually a film?
Yeah. So I was a studio art minor, but my major was media studies, and I studied film and video. So I took a lot of classes in video work, editing, filmmaking, and that sort of a thing.
So, like, does it surprise you at all that where you're at right now is actually painting and doing murals and stuff? Or is this all sort of, this is like, oh, this makes sense?
No, in college, I just wanted to do art, period. And in fact, I think that the reason why I chose media studies is that I didn't need a portfolio. So I just had this turning point that's like, I was in college and I realized that I could choose my own classes. So it was kind of like personal rebellion to just be like, at first I thought I was going to be like a management science or I don't know what major that was going to be, something really boring. Now, again, it was just avoiding adulthood. Like, I just didn't want to deal with responsibilities. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I can be an art major? That's like a real thing?
And it's like, yeah. I can go to college and do art.
There's a department. It's like the Viz Arts department. So I changed my major, and then I went into media studies, but then I was just interested in art, period. And I'd drawn my whole life. Like, I was on student council and everyone made me do the artwork for the Spirit Week events. And then when I was in science, like in high school, all I had to do was draw like cells and draw all the pictures, and everyone else did the work. I thought it was great. So I always did art, and I always had the reputation for doing it. So it just continued as it went. So I'm not surprised. Well, I mean, as soon as I graduated in 2007, I had actually published a book with Necco Press Comics. It was just a book of illustrations that I did. And then from then till now, I just went to different comic book conventions. So that was really natural. I mean, I didn't need to get a degree to do any of that. So that's what I was already doing. But I did study film and video, and it is something that I think about. And all that is just like building up the equipment to do that. So as I've been going, that is still something that I want to pursue. And I do enjoy doing documentaries. So, I mean, that is, I just have too many things that I want to do in life.
Well, I can sort of see, you know, your desire to do documentaries and to document life is happening here in this TriMet mural.
Yeah.
Where you're, you know, documenting your own daughter, and it's not as though you're just taking images that come from your head or just your imagination. You actually went out and did these photo shoots and actually like documented your the city's idea of like all these different communities living together on the east side of Portland. And I just think that's a really fascinating way to capture the city, is through this character that is your daughter, but is actually a reflection of your real life.
Yeah. My life's been changing a lot since I had Mazzy. So she's almost 3. In 1 month, it's going to be her birthday. And just, I think that my life was completely dedicated to weird comics and illustrations, like in an obsessive way. Like, I don't know. I was like trying really hard to like make a name for myself doing like weird, bizarre comics that made no sense. And and then all of a sudden, like, Anne got pregnant. And then I just had to like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I wasn't planning on it. Like, we weren't really, both of us were like, no, we don't want to have kids. Like, well, we don't, like, that's not something that we want. I think that we went back home, and then Anne came to the realization one day. She's like, I think I hate kids. Like, I really don't like kids. Like, I can't deal with them. Like, I think that we were at like a 1-year-old birthday party, like a 1-year-old's birthday party, and we were both like, this is a nightmare. Like, what is happening? This is like the worst. And then like, I think like a week or a month later, she was like, I think I'm pregnant. And then it was just such a huge change. And then it was such a psychedelic experience too, like the birth and then having this thing that we have to like keep alive. And then everything about comics and everything about weird art just kind of like went out the door for me. It was like, it's really not important. Like, it does nothing. Like, I'm sorry. That's like a terrible thing to say because I have a lot of respect for it. It means nothing, but it also means a lot too. Mm. It's really hard for me to explain. Yeah. But then the significance of it obviously became not that intense for me, since I had to keep this baby alive and then I just wasn't thinking about art that much, and I just didn't have the time to invest in it as much, even though that's still something that I really care about. Mm. What was the question?
Well, just how integral now, you know, Mazzy has become part of your art, and I just find that like really interesting, you know, to watch artists grow and how you saw such a shift, like literally in your own life, like, oh, wow, kid. Okay, yeah. Adulting is here, and what does that mean for my art? And now she is literally on your wall, and you know, it's like, I kind of wonder, you know, you're talking about how in your murals it's passing down, right? It's about this concept of passing to generations, and it's you've put this next generation that's literally your next generation, and it's like you're passing down your art. Well, to her in a way, or am I like reading way too much into that?
No, definitely. It's just, I think that before I had Mazzy, there wasn't really a sense of content or a message that I was trying to pass on. And I think that having Mazzy really challenged me in terms of seeing beyond myself as an individual, because everything was just escapism. I don't want to be a part of anything. I'm just going to be in my own little world and create this, like, this, just create my own dimension and live in that dimension because the world sucks, right? And then it seems like after I had Mazzy, it's like, well, I can't really escape what's going on. And, like, she's going to grow up. And I'm trying to mold her, and I'm trying to remember what it was like to be a child and what it was like to like grow up and just interpret and decide what that means. So a lot of my thoughts and a lot of my feelings have been, I mean, it's just, there's a certain amount of, it's like, that's what I want to paint. Like, that's what I want to talk about, is this idea of human life and development and childhood and adulthood, and everything just became more conceptual, and everything became more about analyzing those parts of my identity that I've never tried to think about, because everything before was just escapism and like living in a different dimension.
And now it's so public, the art that you do. I have a question about your next project, the Fresh Paint project, that where you'll be painting a mural on the Open Signal building. What I find really interesting about this project that you'll be painting in September? October?
Well, so it's just like, I wish I was more than one person. So it's just like, I just have to finish this TriMet mural. So in my mind, it's like, I'm doing everything that I can to just like be as fast about it as possible, but I do plan to finish the mural by mid-September, and then it's just immediately on to the Open Signal mural. So it's all back to back, but it's really great. It's great to have the opportunity.
Yeah, it's nice to be a busy artist in this city. And what's interesting, I think, about this other mural is that it is not a permanent mural. And I'm just sort of wondering what your feelings as an artist is, where you're painting something that's intentionally public art, but is intentionally going to be painted over again. So, right? From what I understand about the project, you're one of three artists, and so there's a mural there, and then you'll paint over that current mural?
Everything that I do is super ephemeral. Like, I mean, just the idea is like, I put in hours and hours of stuff to post it on Instagram for one day. It's like, oh, when I post this, people are gonna like it. Like, that's what I cared about, right? It's like, I'm gonna do a really good job and do all this detail so that people will like, 100 people are gonna like it, you know? And and it's all temporary. Like, even, I mean, Anne and I, Mo, my wife, Amisa, is an organizer. So we do like the Portland Zine Symposium, and we also have organized a holiday bazaar. And all that stuff is like tons and tons of work for like one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then no one even knows that we do it. It's just like a something that we do, and it's part of this experience that we have on Earth. So I don't mind that it's temporary. Like, everything feels temporary. Everything is temporary. And I think that a lot of people will see it, and I can take a picture of it, and I'm totally happy about it. It's just, I think these opportunities for me in living life the way that I do, it's just one thing leads to another. So I'm really happy to have the opportunity. Like, for me, I hadn't done I've done a few indoor murals. So I did a ton of bathrooms. Like, in LA, I did like a bunch of bathrooms. Like, I did some bathrooms at the Hive Gallery, and that was temporary too. I think those were only up for like 3 or 4 months, and then someone else would paint over it. So it's like a rotating bathroom gallery for muralists. So I did that first, and then I painted in a pot dispensary in Santa Ana, and then I painted stuff for like music festivals, and then I came here, I painted another bathroom, and then I got the opportunity to paint inside of the K-Town Barbecue restaurant on 82nd Street. And then now it's like they're letting me do my paintings outside. So it's so cool. So people are going to drive by. And I found out about the Open Signal opportunity first. So I was like, wow, this is like my first outdoor mural. And I'm super, super proud of it. And then the TriMet thing just came out of nowhere. And that's just like blowing my mind that that even happened. It's like really surreal, and it's really amazing. So I mean, it was only like, I feel like 2 months ago that I even found out about it. So everything's like really fresh for me. Like, it's still a surreal experience that it's even happening.
And what is that like for you as an artist to really be a part of the city? You know, where you're part, yes, you live here and, you know, your life is here, but I think that public art helps to shape a city for sure. And how either included or not included communities feel, or how much communities feel like their city cares about them because they're wanting to beautify their their part of the city without like gentrifying it, you know.
Yeah.
But actually like creating beautiful space.
Yeah.
So what is that like for you to come out of the bathrooms and be part of this public space?
Well, I'm just trying to understand what my feelings about Portland, because like I have very like conflicting perspectives. Like, in one way, it's like there's this narrative that's like, oh, like Portland is this all white city, and it's like the hub of white supremacy. But then on the other end, it's like I know a very, very awesome creative network here in Portland that seems really supportive of what I do. And the more I think about how I've been interacting with RAC, the Regional Arts and Culture Council, it seems like there is legitimate desire to represent people of color, at least from what I've been seeing. Because I'm part of this committee called the Portland Chronicle. It's like a Portland Art Chronicle, and they buy artwork from people, and they're really trying hard to represent people of color and people of different backgrounds and different status here in this city. And I appreciate that, but I think that that's one thing about art, is that it's an exploration, and I think that there's more that people can do politically with art that's a little bit more acceptable than other things. Like, I don't know if institutionally it seems like I don't know anything about politics. I have no idea. I don't want to start getting into it because I'm going to say the wrong things. But I think that being in Portland, the amount of support that they want to have for people of color is actually pretty good. And I'm going to defend that and say that I feel like people have been giving me the opportunity of that. And then when I gave my concept for the TriMet mural, I think people really embraced the fact that I was going to be going out into the community. And I did want to represent people of different ethnicities and different cultures. And even when I talked to Open Signal, the person who's the director of the mural project was really like, well, we are all for social justice and we want to make sure that people have a voice. And then I also know Andre Middleton is an activist, and also I think he's the director of Open Signal. I could be wrong. But I think that to get to know that he's a really good influence on like the culture and politics and what they're putting out in Open Signal. And it's just really cool to get integrated more and more into Portland, and then really feel like I'm accepted and I'm a voice. So I do appreciate that about Portland.
Yeah, Portland is a really interesting city. If you've ever tuned into Pacific Underground before, you know that I can go on these long rants that always end in, freaking Portland. But I also, you know, it's a unique place, yes, because it's so white and so it creates this culture, but you also see a lot of people who are actively trying to change that, and you know, either it's through changing the demographic or just trying to change the culture so that it is a more welcoming place. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to fight. It's a very difficult thing to overcome just when you have these demographics. Like, it's just difficult. But I do see that there are many organizations and many individuals in this city who are really pushing to be supportive and to get those voices out there that, you know, we aren't used to hearing in Portland. And so I think it's amazing that you've been able to have this opportunity to put up these two murals and, you know, and to continue making art around Portland. And it's a rough place, Portland, but you're making it a more beautiful city. This is my opinion.
I hope so. I'm just going with the opportunities that are coming with me. It's one of those things where it's like, yes, this is like, it was such a crazy experience to have them tell me like, oh, like, we're going to hire you. This is going to be your job. Because to me, it's like, it came out of nowhere. Like, I had no idea that I was going to be doing something like this. And now it's like, this is everything that I've been working towards, is to be able to do something like this. So for me, it's like, this is it. I feel like this is the biggest thing that I've ever done. And if it stops here, I mean, obviously it's not, but if that's it, then it's like, I'm really proud of how far I've gone, at least.
So how many more days, then again, do you think you'll be painting your TriMet mural before you're finished? No pressure.
It's complicated, and I've been trying to break it down. Like, I've been starting on this one panel, and I'm into the final render of it. So there's the first part of my mural. It's like 1 out of 9 parts of the mural. There's like 8 pictures of Mazzy. So I painted 3 of them, and then like, I'm going to put this on the air, but my wife said, Amisa said, that doesn't really look like Mazzy. and it screwed up my head so bad that I was like working so hard on her face. I'm like, oh, I have to get this done today. That's like, if I finish the panel every 2 days, then I can get it done mid-September. Or it's like, in my mind, I'm thinking that way, right? And then I've been spending like 3 days on these like this first part. It's because I can't paint her face right, and I kept repainting it. So if it goes that way, then I'm never going to be done with the mural. But I do plan to get it finished by mid-September, and then just immediately going into the open signal mural right after. But I think a big part of it is my parents have actually been coming down. Actually, my in-laws came down first for 3 weeks, and then my parents came down for 2 weeks so that I could work. Because it's like, we both have full-time jobs.
So it's like, now, are they going to be in town? You have to find like a babysitter?
I got to find babysitter. So yeah. I don't know if people out there babysit, but if you can contact me, I'd like to do an interview and find a babysitter for Mazzy. She's okay. Okay.
So there you go. Alex will be doing murals and is looking for a babysitter.
Yeah, that's happening.
Well, if people want to learn more about your work or see your work, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, most of my weird cartoon stuff is at my website, alexdoodles.com, but I'm also on Facebook and Instagram.
At?
Alex Chu, C-H-I-U, just my name.
We're running out of time here, so thank you so much, Alex, for joining us here on Pacific Underground Day on KBOO Portland. We'll be back again next Friday on September 1st. We'll bring you more interview stuff. In the meantime, go check out Alex painting his mural there on 82nd. He wears a safety vest.
Oh yeah,
he'll be the guy with the brush and a safety vest painting his daughter, and hopefully it looks like his daughter. Yeah. So tune in. Next week, we'll hear you at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in.
Government regulatory agencies like the SEC win. Enron conservatives think of the government.
Just before love got lost, you said, my love is constant as a northern star. And I said, constantly in the dark.
And this is KBOO Portland. It has just become 12 p.m. Yes, we have passed the meridian. We have gone from ante to post. And coming up is the noon headlines at noon, followed by Moving On. Yes, 90 minutes of folk and Americana coming at you. Brought to you fresh and steaming hot by none other than the one and only, the inimitable, and just all around good person, Don Jacobson. That's all coming up, so don't go anywhere.
It's time for the KBOO News at noon for Friday, August.